For 36 years, the Goldman Environmental Prize has celebrated everyday heroes who are showing us that every action has the power to turn apathy into positive change for the environment. Heroes like Bastiana Gurri and Olsi Nika, who helped create Europe's first Wild River National Park. Visit us at goldmanprize.org to discover the stories of this year's Goldman Environmental Prize winners. And learn how when it comes to protecting our planet, the doing makes the difference.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I actually feel the same. I like the question. I'm still not overly concerned about it. I don't know, BT. I've been into these. All I could do is react how I feel, right?
Sure, yeah.
How these games, is why I went nuts about Soto last week. He made me feel upset and angry. These games so far, after game one, I came on yesterday. I know you were away, for Easter. And I was like, I'm not, and we didn't do a ton of Knicks because it happened Saturday night, but I was like, I'm not overly concerned. I know people were looking at saying, oh, they won on that lucky run. Sure, maybe that would have been your take, whatever. For me, it was, they won the game. It's a playoff series. I expected each game to be tough to a certain extent, but I expect the Knicks to win, even if I picked them in five. Same thing now. All right, they lost game two of the postseason. I'm not ready to give up. I'm learning. I wanted to get to the postseason so I could learn about this team.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you're learning about this team through game one and game two so far, but I still haven't learned enough to change my opinion, which is that I love the talent on this team and still believe that while I would not predict they are going to win an NBA championship, I still think that that is possible. I think that those things are there in front of them if they do things the right way, which we're going to find out if they do.
And it's interesting because I feel the same way as well, but I didn't feel good coming in.
So
not so much
opinion
about the series. I thought they'd win the series, but no, I don't feel good about big picture. As a matter of fact, to the point where even if they do win the series, which I think they will, they're going to have to blow something up this summer. And that's a different show for a different
day. Meaning Tibbs or meaning players?
Well, you know where I stand on Tom Thibodeau, but I mean players as well.
Well, how the hell are they going
to
do that?
I don't know, but you have to find, whether it's trading OG and getting a different, there's just, you're going to have to find a way. You don't have picks. And
yeah, they could go the way of the Rangers where they're locked into some of these guys long term. Yeah, this is it.
Like, I know.
I don't know if there is that move.
Well, you could trade OG. I mean, again, that's a broader discussion. Like, and I'm not saying it's OG's fault. I like him, though. He couldn't slow down Cade Cunningham at all last night. He only had three shots from three as well. So
yeah, to have him be a non-factor like that, Towns, OG, and Bridges, at least, I can't call Bridges a non-factor last night. He was
no,
okay.
No, he had some spurts where he was playing really
That's
well.
What I'm
he's
saying.
Feeling himself.
But
yeah.
OG and Towns were non-factors.
Okay, and for me, I agree. And for me, the one that is most or more unacceptable is Karl Anthony Towns. You know, I just don't understand. You know, they're from an athletic, God, I wish that I was as big as some of these guys. I'm like, I just wish that I wish we could take our heart sometimes and just put it in the body of some of these players. I don't know how you could be 7'1", 280, with a depth shooting touch and nimble feet and a good passer and basically sit there and watch for 12 minutes when either your point guard doesn't get you the ball or because he's doing his own thing or the coach is ignoring you. How do you not step up? And then, and when I say step up, I mean demand the ball. I would feel better about the Knicks if Karl Anthony Towns was saying, hey, give me the ball, and he missed five shots in a row, and the Knicks still lost. Because at least I would have seen some pushback. It's like he laid down. He took it laying down.
See, I don't think it's because he lacks toughness or lacks a heart. I think it's because he's too nice. He's being too...
I don't think that's semantics. I think we're kind of saying the same thing at the end of the day. I mean, are you going to bite or are you going to bark? I mean, he doesn't bite enough for me.
But he's also respecting the captain, which is what you want, because if you had a guy here who was stepping, you know, on his toes or out of line or, you know, the whole, let's go back to Mello and Amari dynamic, where it changed. You know, remember, it was Amari's team, and they were succeeding to a certain extent. Mello comes in, and all of a sudden, everything changed, and it kind of hurt what Stoudemire was, and those two never really gelled together. If Towns came in with the ego and attitude that you're talking about, which I would respect to a certain extent, then maybe it wouldn't work with Brunson, but he's more of a, okay, come in and try to fit in, and right now you're learning that maybe you want a little bit more, a little bit less fitting in and a little bit more demanding.
Yeah, a little more wedging your way into the situation.
But he shouldn't have to. See, to me, that's on the captain to make everybody else around him, not only the captain, but the point guard as well, make everybody around him feel more comfortable and feel better and almost force the issue, even if it means a lot of good could have come in Brunson forcing the issue to Cat. And even if Cat wasn't hitting the shots and the Knicks still lost, more good could come of that than what happened last night.
100%, because now you give the Pistons something else to really devote time to in the next couple of days here. Now, listen, I understand that there's a transitional process here, and you know the way power is distributed, you've got to earn it. All right, but I love Jalen Brunson, but let's not make it seem like he's Clyde Frazier when Earl the Pearl Monroe came in here. And Earl was great. I mean, we heard and what we read. He's their guy, but is he good enough to be a champion? My answer is no, if he's that main guy. If other people are going to sit around and watch, then the answer for me is an easy no, because he's not a dynamic athlete. He's never going to impose his will physically on somebody. What Brunson does is amazing, because if he wasn't so good at it, he wouldn't be in the NBA. His footwork, his anticipation, all the things that he does, like, he really is a textbook worker who willed himself to this point. But Karl Anthony Towns was an all-star center for a reason.
Yes.
And he was also an all-star center with the same point guard.
And
so think about this. Like, if this was a season-long issue, then I would say, all right, Jalen Brunson's not doing his job. Last night, I don't think a lot of people did their job, but I think the onus is more on Towns to demand it, because, yeah, I don't know. I haven't seen I think Brunson's more adaptable maybe than you're giving him credit for. I don't think that he's the kind of guy. Now, if it was Marbury, let's just say Stephon Marbury, then I could see friction, and I could see Marbury, who's a shoot-first guy. I think Brunson wants what's best for the team, so if Carl asserts himself a little bit more, I believe Brunson's going to acquiesce, but he's got to want it.
Maybe, but there's a reason why the Knicks went out and got Carl Anthony Towns and Bridges, and it's so they didn't have to do what Brunson tried to do last night. He did it all last year because they had to. It was out of necessity. They shouldn't have had to do that relying on a 35-point-plus game from Jalen Brunson. Not with the guys that they have. Sink or swim, you have to get the other guys involved. I don't want to see. I know what Brunson could do, and I know where that ceiling is. We saw it a year ago. I don't want to see that anymore. I'm not saying that he can't be the focal point for a singular game, but to again try to bring this team up, you know, great, great. Tug on my cape, I'll carry you. Oh, he goes in the locker room and gets a game. No, that's the whole point of bringing in other stars. He's got to get those guys involved. Either way, whether Towns needs to be more assertive or Brunson's got to get them involved, it has to happen for this team to have success.
Otherwise, they had no shot. And as we get back to the Colts here, again, my biggest issue, my biggest gripe is neither of the two men that we just mentioned. It's the coach.
Right,
you're in charge of all this. Fix it.
BT and Sal on the Fan. Anthony's on Long Island. What's up, Ant?
Ant.
Hey, what's up, guys? So a couple of questions here I have to you guys. You know, more towards BT because he's a huge Knicks fan, so no offense, Sal. Have you ever watched a Knick that you just, like, you just get aggravated watching him on the floor?
Yeah.
Like, I'm at that point with Mikal Bridges. Like, it aggravates me. So you're showboating, you're throwing up the three fingers, you hit a layup, everything's amazing, and you disappear at halftime. There's nowhere to be seen, right? Josh Hart cannot play more than 25 minutes. It is crazy for a guy who cannot shoot even a mid-range jump shot to be playing at the end of a game, right?
I agree with your take. And we love Josh Hart. He is playing too many minutes. He's not that guy on a championship team.
Wait. But to counter, what was the Knicks' biggest issue last night statistically? What was the thing that they didn't do that the coach called him out for?
Well, this is my next point.
You know what it was, right?
It's rebounding.
Yep.
Josh Hart is one of their best rebounders. So you can't have everything. I mean, if Josh Hart could shoot, he'd be an all-star. You wouldn't have to go get Karl Anthony Towns.
Right. But here's the problem, Sal. This is the problem. And this is my last point with Tits. You see you're getting destroyed on the glass, right? Can we stop babying Mitchell Robinson like he's some newborn kid?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, put him in the game. And why isn't Precious Achiuwa? I'm not saying Precious is, oh, my God, amazing. I hate to sound like Boomer for a second here. But Precious can move his feet.
Yeah.
He can rebound the ball. He can pass the ball.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing him play, you know, 5-6 minutes a half here. But if this is about Precious Achiuwa, we may as well start booking reservations for next year because it's over.
Right.
At that point.
So you want more Mitchell Robinson and more Precious Achiuwa. Where are you getting the points from? The Knicks' issue last night was scoring and rebounding. That were their defense was not the issue. It was scoring and rebounding. Now, Mitchell Robinson could help in one aspect of that, but he cannot score.
No. But that also goes back to when we had these conversations about the Knicks' big picture going into the playoffs where, hey, you know, play him at the five and put Cat at the four and do this and do that. I was never bullish on that. I wouldn't mind seeing it a little, Tom Thibodeau, but I don't think it's a long-term solution because of the deficiency that he brings in. And if you play Josh Hart, you got 40% of your starting five. That guys on the floor can't score.
I think it's more for the next round against the Celtics, assuming that the Knicks face the Celtics in the second round. More minutes from Mitchell Robinson. In this particular series, I'm not sure it's a necessity.
I know what you mean about the bigs with KP and a good matchup, but you've said that before.
Well, because
the Celtics are not as physical as the Pistons, and nobody is in the entire NBA. And Mitchell is their most physical player by far. You got to play him this series.
But that's kind of my point, where the Pistons are more physical, so it's tougher to get buckets. I'm looking for offense. When the Knicks have 75 points last night in the third quarter, whatever it was.
Yeah.
Most of them were
free throws. You know, if you think about that, as they tacked on points in the fourth quarter.
You need buckets. And against this team, if you need buckets and, you know, the tough buckets at that against Detroit, you know Mitchell Robinson's the last guy. I wouldn't even think about Achiuwa. As a matter of fact, I thought, I said this before, in case you missed anything, check out on the Free Odyssey app. My biggest gripe with Tibbs was going to the bench late first quarter when, I'm not saying you can't bring in a sub or two, he brought in four guys at once. Let the game get away from him late in the first quarter. And I'm thinking, okay, well, the reason is he's trying to steal extra minutes. You do it with 2 minutes to go in the first quarter. You have the break in between. Okay, fine. The game got away from him, and they never were able to get it back to that point. I mean, I know they tied it late, but still they were chasing all night long. For Landry Shamet and Deuce McBride, who I thought he stuck with too long. I know Deuce hit the big three, the backboard, but Deuce is not a good shooter either. He's inconsistent as well.
I really thought he was going to have a better season. I know he's banged up. I still really like Deuce. I think I like him a lot more than you. I definitely trust him a lot more than you, but... Yeah. You know, you can only play what your general manager or your team president gives you. The Knicks bench is not good. It will not be good no matter how long they play the next week, the next month, the next 2 months, whatever it is. If the Knicks win, it's going to be in spite of the bench rather than because of the bench. And that's fine, provided that the guys who were paid to be top billing don't shrink and hide like Karl Anthony Towns and some others.
Who do you trust more, Campaign or Deuce?
It's shifted probably more to campaign.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time it's subject to change. Max 1 offer per account.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. Ugh. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
Founded in 1964, Fremont Bank understands the difference 60 years can make. It's the difference between serving a family business and being dedicated to a family business as a family business. The difference between looking at spreadsheets and looking at possibilities. The difference between deposits that go into a vault and deposits that go back into your community. So what difference does 60 years make? All the difference in the world. Fremont Bank. Here for you. Here for good.
And I'm with you.
Probably.
And now maybe, a big part of that is because campaign last night came in and he was, I don't know what he was doing, fouling guys all over the place. He was a total mess. The Knicks are sloppy by nature anyway. They're too sloppy with the ball. And that includes Jalen Brunson. Dude, enough of dribbling the ball off your foot. This is the NBA. Like, you can't be doing that in the postseason. The Knicks are a very sloppy team. Carl Anthony Towns, same thing. Big man going with the ball, trying to attack the rim. I'm thinking, oh, my God, here we go. So they are sloppy. Now, Detroit is good defensively, sure, but the Knicks are sloppy by nature. Campaign diving all over the place. How do you get 3 fouls in 4 minutes? So that led to McBride playing a little bit more. But ideally for me, I would shorten the bench to where I'd go Mitch, I'd go campaign, and out of necessity, either Achiuwa or McBride. That would be it for me, out of absolute necessity. If I need a big because somebody's in foul trouble or I want some toughness or rebound, I'll go Achiuwa. If I need another guard, I'll go McBride. I am shortening the bench. I'm using a 7-man rotation for the most part if I'm the Knicks.
I know he's not guarding him straight up, obviously, but because it's been OG, and OG did it very well in game one, did not do it very well at all in game two, but think about this, Sal. We pointed out a long time ago, and there's other weaknesses. And by the way, there's a lot of attributes on this Knicks team. You don't win 50 games by being deficient in everything. So I don't want to turn it into the sky is falling, but it kind of is because it's always been about the championship this year for me, based on the big swing and the moves that they made with Cat and with Bridges. But the two biggest weaknesses, the point guard defensively and the center defensively. And look what's happened in this series. It's showing up.
Keith is in Queens. What's up, Keith?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good.
What's up, buddy?
I just wanted to talk about Sal. I think, Sal, you hit the nail on the head, unfortunately, a little while ago when you said, ultimately, Brunson and Towns as number one and number two aren't good enough to win a championship. And last night, Tibbs definitely has to take some heat. I mean, you can't go the last 3 minutes basically just flatten out and let Brunson dribble the ball into the ground. And then he's falling all over. It's hard to watch. It's frustrating to watch. And I mean, this team, we have more offensive talent at virtually every position outside Cunningham. I mean, that coaching has to be part of that. So I mean, we're not taking advantage.
I think we love
honestly, and I hate to say it, Sal, last year it seemed like you were more critical after the two victories the Knicks got in the first round than you are of them dropping this game, which I kind of don't really understand.
Well,
I kind of really don't understand.
I'll explain it. It's because go ahead, Keith, finish up, and then I'll explain it. Go ahead.
Okay. What was I going to say?
All right, I'll just explain it now, and thank you for the call. We appreciate you checking in. First of all, it was a totally different team. And they were playing a totally different team. To me, the way the Knicks played last year in the postseason to start had me concerned that they were going to get beat by a team that I thought was very dangerous in the Philadelphia 76ers. That's one part of it. The second part of it is that I did not believe that the Knicks had enough last year, especially without Julius Randle, to overcome the talented Philadelphia 76ers, if they continue to play that the way that they were playing early on. I forget the exact way the series went, but remember what it took to beat them, BT.
Mm-hmm.
It's the whole point about Brunson. It took Brunson to be Superman in that series for the Knicks to overcome the Sixers. Now they did. Fast forward to this year. So we know where I stood last year on that. This year, I believe in the talent, and I'm learning about this team as we go. I also don't think the Pistons are as dangerous as the Sixers were a year ago. So I believe more in the talent of this group while learning about them, while also having them, in my mind, facing a lesser opponent than they did last year against the Sixers.
Yeah, I remember those conversations. Yeah. I got you. Listen, what's very disconcerting to me, and this is not, even though I felt this way after a week and certainly after a month, that's not the point. It's not a month into the season. It's not two. It's not three. It's not four. I feel like the Knicks haven't gelled at all this year. I mean, it's April. It's almost May. Playoffs are here. Heard a lot of excuses. Cat's new. You know, Mikal Bridges new. Brunson's hurt. Lost Dante. Lost Hartenstein. It was a great passer. I know. We all know this. I don't feel like the Knicks have grown this year. And to me, that goes back to the coach.
And I still think we're learning about that. Sometimes it takes extra time. And really, in the postseason is where you really find out what they're made of, which is why I've been reserving judgment. Yet, I wanted to see this thing play out. And by the way, like statistically, numbers-wise, they're still one of the best teams in the NBA. So even though you could poke holes in them and we could say, oh, it's not the same or they haven't gelled, they still had, what, the fourth or fifth most wins in the league, fifth highest, highest offensive efficiency rating. Now, I will say that if we had last year's version taking on the Pistons,
yep.
And I think the Knicks are going to win the series anyway, but I don't think that last year's version of the Knicks would have lost to this Pistons team either. Where you're really going to see the difference, where you need the talent, is the next round and the rounds beyond that. Doesn't mean that I think the Knicks are going to beat the Celtics, but it means that I think that they could if they were gelling and clicking right. Mm-hmm. Whereas last year, I did not believe they could. This round, sure, they would have been able to get by, right? You would prefer DiVincenzo and Hartenstein. You'd feel better about this team against this Pistons team right now. But moving forward, at least in my mind, BT, that ceiling was there with the Knicks last year, whereas because of the talent, I believe that the ceiling is far greater now.
I feel you. Even though we differ on some of the things here, I don't disagree with that bottom line assessment. The difference, I think, is that I don't believe the talent, which is much higher this year, is built for the toughness and the length required to win, you know, play the highest level of basketball for 2 months. I don't think they get there. I agree with your concept. I really do. I actually think it makes a ton of sense because you got an all-star in Cat. You got better players. You got Bridges, Shooter. Knicks should be a lot better. I just don't see it playing out that way. And that's why I kind of go to the future fast with this team. You try, like, I'm not doing that with the Mets right now because the Mets, they just got Soto. They just, right. You know, some pitching, even though the Mets look terrific. I'm not doing that with the Yankees right now. Bellinger's not hitting. A couple of guys that are going to pitch aren't healthy. I do it with the Knicks, and if I was a diehard Ranger fan, I would have been doing it with the Rangers as well because when you're X last year and then you add to X, I expect you to become Y, and I don't think that they have, and I don't think that they will, and I hate that I feel that. I hate that I see that, but that's what I see.
BT and Sal on the Fan. We did see something of note in the football world as we get closer and closer to the NFL draft coming up on Thursday. It does pertain to the second and third picks in the NFL draft, which will impact obviously the Giants, but maybe even the Jets. So we'll discuss that when we come back and continue the conversation with the Knicks after their loss in Game 2. 888-808-1019, BT and Sal on the Fan. We had the schedule out with the Knicks. Game 3 will also be Thursday night draft. Same thing happened last year, I'm pretty sure, because I remember having to go back and forth watching the draft and see what the Giants and Jets did, mm-hmm. As well as paying attention to the Knicks playoff game. So we'll get back to the Knicks calls here in just a second off their loss in Game 2. As for the draft, the report, the latest report from Peter Schrager, who is now with ESPN, has that the Browns and the Giants at number 2 and number 3 are both fielding calls. And to use his words, and I'm paraphrasing, but he did say neither team is hanging up on those calls that are coming in. And the calls that are coming in are in regards to three players: Travis Hunter, Abdul Carter, and Janty, the running back. Yeah.
Okay. So ESPN could have paid us, you and I, less than what they're paying Traeger, and we could have said the same thing. And I like Schrager. I think he's good. But, I mean, no kidding the phone's ringing for the top two picks. And no kidding that the teams that are getting the calls, or top three picks, really, whatever, are going to actually engage in a conversation to see if there's somebody on the other line that's very desperate that might be willing to give up an incredible haul. Not exactly breaking news to me, but, you know, we'll see. I did see a little...
Well, you do know that he's, I mean, I would think...
Oh, no, I'm not saying he's not piped in. Yeah. No, I'm for sure, but that's common sense to me. You know, you're...
Well...
Because there's no... I would say that's common sense because, to me, I don't think... I like Cam Ward. I don't think Cam Ward's generational, so there would be some investigation there by somebody in the draft, I would think.
But it wasn't about... It wasn't
I know.
About-
I get that. You go to 2 and 3. The trickle down here is, so if the number one, or at least the perceived number one overall pick, is not exactly a lock in terms of a talent. I don't mean the actual choice Titans. I mean the talent and the projectability. Well, then why wouldn't 2 and 3 be? It would be the same thing.
Well, think about this, because I have, prior to this report, I have not heard... I'm not saying the teams wouldn't be open to trading out or whatever... Trading back down, I have not heard that the Browns would be looking to trade that second pick. Now, here's where it gets really interesting. Let's just say, okay, well, whatever. You could assume that that's going to be the case, fine. The fact that the Giants would be open to trading the third pick is also not shocking, but I think it would only be in the circumstance that, let's say, somebody trades up to number two, or Cleveland stays at number two and they select Abdul Carter. Now... You have the Giants at number three. They're not going to take Shedeur Sanders at that particular pick. Maybe they don't love Hunter. We talked about all the reasons why last week. They don't necessarily have a need at wide receiver or cornerback.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they don't want him to play both, even though they say that they do. He could be a player that we have no idea. You know, he's coming in already making demands, Hunter.
I'm only signing with a team that wants me to play both.
Okay. So I would not take Travis Hunter if I'm the Giants. I wouldn't even take him if I'm the Browns, but forget them. Who cares about them? I would take Carter number two. So let's say that somehow Carter's off the board at number two, whether it's the Browns or somebody who trades up. Now, if I'm the Giants, I would be looking to trade back.
Yes.
And have the team that wants Hunter come up to number three.
Yep.
I could trade back, and then maybe I get Shedeur Sanders at a better value.
I think that's a money move. I'm less enthused about Sanders than you.
Right.
But yeah, that opens up a broad scope of possibilities here for the Giants. I mean... So there's a couple things here as I weave this together. I saw something before we came back on the air here. One GM has Cam Ward rated right now as the 7th best quarterback. If he was in last, not this year.
Oh,
if
I was like, what?
Yeah, no,
these things are nuts.
Titans really misread the situation. if he was in the draft a year ago, they'd have him this particular, now it's subjective, whatever, but it's an interesting read as to how he's 7th, right? So what does that say about Shedeur Sanders? Is he 8th? Maybe not. Is he 9th or 10th? Either way, you know where I stand. I'm not taking Shedeur Sanders. I think that the draft really starts, to your point.
Sanders, by the way, yesterday,
he was on, Phil or Chris?
Phil was in with Boomer and Gio for most of the show. It might have been the whole show.
Okay.
Or at least a couple hours.
What did he say?
He was saying that there is no consensus that has Shedeur Sanders the 2nd best quarterback in the draft.
And yeah, I believe it. Right. I think that there's a chance. We've talked about this. I don't want to say we were first on this. That sounds ridiculous. But you and I were having conversations 5-6 weeks ago. Well, could he maybe fall to the Saints at 9? That's where the door started to really open
and
for
it
that
felt
conversation.
Like, it felt like some people, maybe the Saints, were higher on Jackson Dart when we were having that conversation.
There was that implication as well. Now, who really knows what's true? Right. It seems Ward's going to go 1. It seems Hunter's going to go 2, which to me really sets up the Giants. The draft starts at 3 if Hunter goes 2. If, to your point, if Abdul Carter goes 2, now you could still say the draft really starts at 3, but in a very different way, because the Giants are going to get a ton of calls. And at that point, if I'm the Giants, I am absolutely, I'm not even amenable. I am proactively looking to get out of 3. And,
right.
And I can make a case for an offensive lineman. I can make a case for probably 2 or 3 other positions if I can't get my hands on Abdul Carter, who is the player you and I both think the Giants need.
Well, who do you think is the best player in the draft?
I think it's Carter.
Me too. So the fact that the Giants...
It could be the running back, though, but there's no way to doing that again.
Well, and imagine...
After we just went through the Saquon stuff.
The Giants absolutely cannot do that. No, they cannot do that.
No, they won't.
I wouldn't be shocked if... I mean, could the Raiders trade up to 3 and take the running back? Maybe they want to make sure that nobody leapfrogs them. Giants trade back a little bit and get Sanders. Well, whatever it may be, if Carter is there at number 3, as much as I want a quarterback, and again, I'm not saying that they have to take a quarterback number 3, and I certainly would understand a lot more if Carter is not there. If he's not there, I'm not picking Hunter at 3 if I'm the Giants. I'm figuring it out. I'm either trading down, getting a quarterback, finding something else, trading a quarterback later. But
do you think, real quick, do you think they're thinking that?
I do.
I do too.
I believe that the Giants believe Carter's the best player in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
And if he is there at 3, they are going to take him. If he is not, I also believe Now, this is where I could, you know, you could always be wrong, but I don't believe the Giants would take Hunter. I'm trying to use a little common sense here. There's no way they could justify taking Hunter. You could always say, don't draft based on need. You get yourself in trouble. They are not in a position to take a two-way player that is forcing his way into a two-way player, both of which positions are the Giants have young players at. It's not a position of need.
Let me ask you this. If Hunter was just a corner, is there a thought that he's going two or three?
Good question.
Or if he's just a receiver. I think he's a very talented player, clearly. But I think part of the allure is that you think you're getting one and a half players.
Maybe.
But if you don't deploy him properly, or he can't physically, you know, maintain that workload, you're kind of overdrafting him
at
two or three.
Do you think the majority of teams view him as a long-term two-way player?
No.
Me neither. And he himself says he's demanding, before he even took a snap in the NFL, wants to play ball.
I don't think that will dissuade somebody from drafting him, thinking that they will tell him what to do and he will eventually acquiesce. Now, by the way,
I wouldn't take that chance.
I wouldn't do it either. The other thing here is that we're talking about the Giants in a very good position. So are the Jets. Because the Jets at seven, let's just say the Giants trade out, whether it's with the Raiders to come up and get a running back or the Saints to come up and get Shedeur Sanders. Now, there's going to be a player that the Jets, as of right now, probably don't think that they could get.
Right.
And I don't mean a quarterback.
No, because you're looking at it. If the running back gets taken ahead of them, that's a pick the Jets were not going to get anyway.
Correct.
So now you know Ward's going to be off the board, Hunter's going to be off the board, Carter's going to be off the board. Say the running back, there's only two more players that can be selected before the Jets pick.
Yep.
They're going to have a nice...
either the top O lineman, the top tight end. They're not going receiver. You know, they might even... and I wouldn't really love this, but the Jets could go D-line, too, with like Mason Graham. I know he's good, but I think they need a lineman, offensive lineman more than him.
Would you just go best player available for them?
It depends. Probably not, because if I'm going to preface it with "it depends," then my answer would be no. I think the Jets need to go offensive lineman or the tight end.
Yeah,
and I would go O lineman first.
Yeah, I just think that they're going to be in a good spot, especially if the running back, if Ashton Jeanty goes before they pick, which it seems like that's going to be the case.
That's what I'm saying. That changes a lot for them favorably.
Right.
There's an extra big name that they don't like right now. Until we could speculate, there might be a trade. We heard this, maybe that. Until there's a trade in the Jets' minds and the Giants. But the Giants control more of their own destiny because they're third. The Jets are saying to themselves, this guy, we love this guy, but he's not going to be there when we go at seven. But if the running back goes or somebody moves up to get Sanders, my point, then one of these players that the Jets must absolutely love, but they don't think is going to be there at seven, he's going to be there at seven.
Now time for Bold Face Lie, Bold Face Truth with Brendan Tierney and Sal Licata.
All right, a little bald face truth, bald face lie every Tuesday, 11:40. Hoff, what do you have for us?
All right, BT, we'll start with you. If you know Caleb Durbin, he hit his first home run yesterday as a Milwaukee Brewer. Yankees, true or false, bald face lie, bald face truth. Yankees lost the Devin Williams trade.
No, I can't say that. I'm going to say a bald-faced lie. It's really impossible to answer it now. Durbin didn't even make the team on opening day, right? That's like I'm not paying attention to them.
He just got called up 2 days ago.
He got called up, right? Mm-hmm. So, and impressed enough to make the team where, listen, Devin Williams has been awful. I mean, he's got an ERA of 9. He's walking the ballpark.
Oh,
is
it that low? 9?
Yeah, he's getting it down here. Yeah, no, he's tightening things up a little bit. He has been atrocious. I do trust. Now, there's some evidence here that he gets better in Milwaukee when he's putting up historical numbers where he's slow out of the chute. He gets a few more ticks on the fastball. The changeup becomes more effective. I'm hoping that's the case. So I'm going to say bald-faced lie with an asterisk. There's also something to be said for not being cut out for New York. And I'm not going to say that yet. But if this keeps going for a couple of weeks, I will.
I'm going to say bald-faced lie. I know it was a brutal loss on Saturday. But watching that game, that to me, I said this yesterday, it was more bad luck than anything else. Now, Williams has not earned the benefit of the doubt because he's been bad to start this year, but I don't think that particular outing was necessarily all on him. You know, little bloops, infield hits, bad defense. There was a lot there that led to that blown save. Bald-faced lie, they did not lose that trade. I would make that trade every single time over because the Yankees are going for it. Now, remember, I was also saying, hey, you gave up Clay Holmes or you lost Clay Holmes, you're bringing in Williams. I didn't think that the you know, trade-off was as great as everybody was making it seem with Williams, who on paper was the best in the game. This is what happens with closers. Good news is maybe he's getting it all out of the way now, and he can kind of right the ship here. What do you got, Alf?
All right, Sal, bald-faced lie, bald-faced truth. Juan Soto will not have a home run at Citi Field till May.
Oh, we're not counting last night? I mean, I thought that I saw that on social media. SNY posted out there, the one that nearly scraped the foul pole. Here's what I'm going to say about Juan Soto, and this is why I'm going to say this about Juan Soto. People are sensitive.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for members. Hass avocados or mangoes, 4 for $5 or $1.25 each. Signature Farms boneless, skinless chicken breasts or thighs, buy one, get one free of equal or lesser value when you buy two. And enjoy an exclusive digital deal on Sargento shredded or sliced cheeses. 5 to 8 ounce selected varieties, $1.97 each, limit 4. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Esa-Pekka Salonen's final concerts as music director of the San Francisco Symphony bring legendary artists and epic music to Davies Symphony Hall, culminating in Mahler's electrifying Second Symphony. Tickets at sfsymphony.org.
If you love your customers, you have to try RingCentral. No matter the size of your business, every call, every text, every meeting, every customer conversation matters. With RingCentral, you get a reliable business phone, a modern contact center, and built-in AI across every conversation, so you can focus on the moments that matter. See for yourself at ringcentral.com.
RingCentral, intelligent communications you can trust.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EARPOD1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
People are sensitive. You can't criticize anymore. I've heard a lot from a lot of different people in a lot of different places. Can't criticize anymore. You can praise. Mets pitching is great. Stearns is a genius. Alonso's an MVP. Ben Rice is the future. Goldschmidt's back. You can praise after 20 games. You can't criticize. So here's what I'm going to say about Juan Soto. Juan Soto, as we speak, at 11:46 and counting on this Tuesday morning, he has played 23 games with the Mets. He has hit .244 for his batting average. He has an OPS of .785, and he has 3.5 home runs. That's all I was saying about Juan Soto.
Oh, man. All right, so before May, right? So what remains of April here? Obviously, that's a bold-faced, that's a bold-faced lie. Come on, man. I mean, what are we overthinking here? I know it hasn't been a rosy start. And, you know, but he's going to crank. Well, I thought he had one last night, as you said. He's going to crank one soon. I'm just trying to figure out how many games
there's
before.
There's only 4 games left.
Well, you got the Phillies, and then you've got the Diamondbacks right after the.
No, they're going on the road to Washington.
I believe. Yeah, but I think they come home for this. So, Washington. Then they come home.
But they only have two of those games are in April. So, total of 4
you're
more
right.
games.
You're
in
right.
April. Home games.
All right. So, 16 at bats, a couple of walks. I'm going to say, that's a bald face truth that he will.
That okay. he will hit that a home run.
One.
Okay.
All right, lock it up. Put the bets in, boys.
There you go. I like that. Usually I don't take a pass on these things, BT. I just wanted to lay the facts
can't
out there.
Can't boo anymore,
everybody.
Huh? By the way, did you say yesterday? I'm gonna get that later because it's pretty interesting. Something about how the younger fans don't boo anymore. And like there's a bigger conversation
there.
I saw that on social. I think it's pretty interesting.
Okay.
Go ahead, Alfie. What do you got?
All right, BT.
Yeah.
There's a little hear this one fully out. Okay. You guys are just talking about the Giants and the draft.
Mm-hmm.
The Giants will draft both Carter and Sanders before they draft neither Carter or Sanders.
I got you. So what's the higher rate of probability that they walk away with both by making a trade or they pass on both there?
Yes.
I mean, I think that there's a really good chance that they get Carter, but I don't think there's any chance that they're going to take Sanders. It's a very tricky question the way you worded this, Hoff. Boldface, listen, do I think they'll get both or neither more? I don't know how to answer. I'm confused. Say the question again.
Well, okay, because here's the thing is, right? We're talking about Sanders slipping. There's a possibility of that.
But is the I have to agree with BT
Bald face lie or bald face truth. Giants will have a better chance of drafting both Carter and Sanders rather than drafting neither of them.
I'll say bald. I'm going to play the semantics here. They'll have a better chance of. So I'm going to say bald face truth, but I don't necessarily believe that they would do it. Like, meaning, I do believe Sanders falls to a point that's interesting enough where if the Giants wanted to trade out of round two and get into round one to maybe take a swing at Sanders, that they will very more likely have that possibility. But I don't think that they take Sanders.
I'm going to say it's a bald-faced lie. I don't think the Giants have any shot of getting both. I know everybody's starting to dream about that. They're not getting both. I don't even know. I'm not so sure they're getting Carter. I mean, if you and I think that Carter is the best player in the draft, and we're not alone in that, what makes us think that Cleveland or whoever they trade the pick to at number two doesn't think the same thing?
Yeah, but we're also kind of sharing that common thought that Sanders is dropping. So why would we apply that to one thing and not the other? You know what I mean, so like, why wouldn't you and I believe that Sanders is dropping?
Right.
Now, maybe the team's willingness to move up for a quarterback is more than somebody else, but I think he's dropping. I don't think he's going, you know, top five, top. I think if anybody, it's going to be the Saints. Where do you think Sanders actually goes?
Well, I'm not sure about that, but I'm confused as to I'm just missing the point here. As it pertains to Carter, if we think he's the second best player in the draft, right? And the consensus is he's at the very least a top three player in the draft.
Yeah.
With Sanders, who the hell knows? Like, you could say, oh, he's the best. He's the second best quarterback in the draft. Mm-hmm. He's third best, whatever. Somebody who's gonna take him. I don't think the Giants love Sanders, and I'm not so sure that Carter's gonna be there at number three for the Giants.
Yep.
So therefore, I'm gonna say it's a bold-faced lie. I think it's more likely they get neither. Yeah. Than both. Now, the only way that happens is if Carter is not there at three. If Carter is there at three, I fully expect, like everybody else in the world, that the Giants will take him. And if they did do that, they're not getting Sanders. So for me, it's more likely they get neither than it is they get both.
Very trickily worded there, huh?
Yes.
Very,
semantics,
very
of course. All right, let's get back to the phones here. BT and Sal on the Fan. I love the bald face truth, bald face lie. Sometimes it can be confusing. Alex is in East Quag talking about those Knicks after game two. What's up, Alex?
Hey, good morning. Can I make a quick point before I get to Tibbs about the Knicks? I'll tell you why they're in bigger trouble than people realize. Malik Beasley shot 42% in the season on threes. Tim Hardaway shot 37% during the season on threes. The Knicks lost. The Knicks, who can't defend the three, lost a game last night in which Beasley and Hardaway were a combined 2-for-17. I don't think that's going to happen again. So keep that in mind when you go back.
Meaning that the Pistons have already won one at the Garden, and some of the stats that have not even really come to fruition yet, based on the probability, will come to fruition, and that's bad for the Knicks.
You could also flip it the other way, though. Here's what I would say, and we'll let you get your next point in, Alex. I feel great about Tim Hardaway shooting the basketball from a Knicks perspective. Keep shooting it. Hardaway, Tobias Harris, Beasley scares me.
Mm.
He's got stones. Mm. That dude, I want him on the Knicks. I love that guy.
Yeah.
He's a playoff basketball player. He's a tough guy.
He's tough.
I'll sign up for Hardaway shooting as many shots as he is not his father.
I see your point on that. But I wouldn't suspect Beasley's going to have that bad a game going back home for game three. Here's my stuff on Tibbs. First of all, Landry Shamet doesn't do a damn thing except score when he's hot. He's a string bean. He doesn't defend. He doesn't rebound. He played 5 minutes last night. Go look at the box score. It's like he's invisible. He didn't take a shot. He didn't get a rebound. He didn't get an assist. 5 minutes. So no plays were called for him for the guy that you put in there hoping that he might get into a hot streak, which he can do from outside. No plays were called for him. Secondly, my last point, if you're going to complain about the officiating like Tibbs did, then you better pound the ball into your all-star 7-footer who's being guarded by a 6-foot-7 guy and have him fouled almost every time. It's on the coach. I know Brunson over-dribbles. He takes too much on himself. The coach is the one who has to say, stop this foolishness. Here's what we're doing. And Tibbs, do it. Thanks.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I've been saying that as well. But, I mean, can you recognize the mismatch? I mean, there's certain things at this level. I mean, at the high school level, you wouldn't have to really verbalize that to your point guard. When there's such a physical mismatch, you just give him the ball. But again, it's a two-way street, and the onus is on Cat. You've got to put your hand up, and you got to put you behind in the post.
Yeah, I would have liked to have seen. I don't know how much of that is on Brunson, how much of it's on Cat, how much of it's on Tibbs. But I would have liked to have seen a little bit more of trying to get it down low to the big guy. I believe all three are somewhat responsible for it. But I also believe the biggest reason is because of the Pistons' defense and toughness. The Knicks there for a stretch, I forget if it was the second quarter, third quarter, where they had nothing going offensively. The Pistons were swarming and making it near impossible for the Knicks to do anything. I don't care if they were on the perimeter, interior. They were getting hit in the face right out of the gate. So maybe that made it more difficult for trying to get Cat down low. Maybe they got away from it, chasing a little bit.
But you think that's going to change moving forward?
I don't know still if that should be the focal point of the Knicks offense. I'm not. This team is not necessarily built to. This is not Patrick Ewing, and it is not the 90s. Now, the good thing is that they could, if they felt that the series was going that way, where they were best suited to feed the beast down low, they could survive with that. That's a part of Cat's game. A bigger part of the Knicks' offensive game has been spacing and knocking down threes. That was not there last night. The caller referenced Beasley and Hardaway. Well, what about OG Anunoby, Karl Anthony Towns, and Bridges from downtown? The Knicks aren't built to win if they don't hit some of their threes.
If I look at Karl Anthony Towns, some of the biggest games he's had this year, almost every one is the similar script where he's involved very early, which, you know, if you're going to score 40 points, generally you're going to do some damage in the first quarter anyway. But knocks down a couple of the threes, gets to the free throw line quite a bit. Once he starts knocking down some bombs, now a little pump fake, that one or two dribble that takes up 20 feet basically, and then he just cocks it back and he dunks. The problem is he's not quick enough to get by some of these smaller bigs of the Pistons, and he's also not tough enough to stay on track to go to the rim. They're kind of getting him off of his spot. So I don't really know how it's going to change. I'm not saying he's going to score 10 points every single game. If he's this invisible, he's going to get booed out of town. Don't even waste your time coming back next year if he plays this way and the Knicks get bumped. But I don't think there's going to be some massive switch or some flip that is a switch that is flipped where Karl Anthony Towns starts playing a different game because he hasn't really done that all year.
Greg is in Mayapack. What's up, Greg?
Sal, VT, thanks for taking the call. You guys have me thinking about the Knicks. Listen, guys, let me just touch on the Knicks quick before I get to the Mets. I still think that adding Towns and Bridges, the team is not a better team than when Randall, Hartenstein, and DiVincenzo was on the team. It's a good team on paper, good team, 50 wins, but the dogs are gone. You know what I mean? So we gotta just see how this plays out. But I'm not feeling that great. In any event, I'd like to tip my cap to the Mets fans for supporting Soto and not making the same mistake that we all made, booing Piazza, booing Beltran. This guy's going to be here forever. So the worst thing we can do is put a bad taste in the guy's mouth early. Second thing, this guy's slumping is better than most guys' career year. We're 16-7. We got Sal. I know what you want. I would love for the guy to have 10 home runs and 30 RBIs already, but he's fine. It's all good, Sal. We're going to be all right.
Yeah, no, Greg, it's fine, and thank you for the call. And I'll reiterate, the Mets are in first place playing well. City Field's been electric. Juan Soto's played 23 games as a Met. Juan Soto is hitting two. I'm saying this in a positive way. I'm going to try to throw on the pot. Juan Soto is hitting .244, 12 ribbies, .785 OPS, and has 3.5 home runs on the year.
3.5.
Well, I mean, you got to count last night for a little. He ran around the bases.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, understood. Let me see here. You know it's going to change, dude.
I
don't. You were saying that the other day. You know it's going to change.
We had the conversation. But what? We're not allowed to criticize now? I mean,
well, who said, you know, I
multiple people
get some calls here over at the old the TV network?
Multiple people.
Really? Well, you know what you tell those people? Get back in your hole and do what you do. Because Juan Soto's hitting .244 with 3.5 home runs. If they like it, then that's good for them.
This is my way of saying that.
I understand. He is, all right, I mean, listen, I'm just looking at this. He's 86. He's tied for 86 with that in average. Not bad.
Okay, that's not bad.
Yeah, listen, a lot of guys behind him.
Where is he in grounding into double play? It's not that I want to bring up such a negative stat.
There. He's tied for 74th in home runs, and he's tied for 53rd in RBIs. Now.
And to me, the two things that would bother me if I, you know, was going that way would be how he started with the Yankees last year, also his career numbers. Not saying that he's, you know, obviously he could have a bad start. It happens to everybody. He didn't have a bad start last year with the Yankees, and it's been 20. It's just he'll be fine. We all know that. Nobody's questioning what Juan Soto's going to do long term. But right now, he's hitting .244, an OPS of .785. You're a big OPS guy.
Yeah, I am. OPS, by the way, I'll give you the number on that. I believe he is in the, 67th percentile right
now. Huff, can you look up real quick, and I forget the exact number, how many games Juan Soto has played at Citi Field as a visitor? Because I
used to go bonkers there.
I also know this. How many games did he play? Well, here's the quick math. But forget even total how many games he played as a National, because there were a lot, in the Padres. How many games do you think, BT, Soto played as a member of the Yankees at Citi Field?
A couple.
Well, at least three, right? We would think. Yep. Hit a couple home runs. He's played 11 games so far at Citi Field, and he's only had the half home run.
I got to tell you, though, man, it is vibrant out there.
It's
great. Place is popping, man. Cohen talked about the attendance, talked about the energy. Now, good performances, clutch home runs, that adds to the joy and that adds to the juice there. But Mets fans have been, they took the advice of the owner. They're there every night. It looks good.
We talked about this early in the season. Could this be the beginning of what the Yankees have experienced? Obviously, we know the sustained winning has to follow. But right now, I think this is exactly how everybody drew it up.
It's all through a great start. It's also, to get there where, with the attendance and the buzz never dissipates. It's a long road. But I don't think you look at it that way. I think you look at this as, the new version of these Mets. And seeds were planted years ago when Cohen bought the team. And now it's another step in the right direction. And listen, when Soto starts hitting, I mean, now you're going
to look
listen
to this.
Pretty good.
Listen to this. So, Hoff, you're telling me Soto played 35 games in total as a visitor at Citi Field in his career? That's it? 35?
Yeah, 35 games.
Juan Soto played 35 games as a visitor at Citi Field, and he had how many home runs?
12.
And he's played how many at home now? 11? And he's got?
A half.
I'm just giving you the numbers. Don't shoot the messenger. That's just the facts.